Okay, this is our seventh session, and this is a retake of that. And this tonight's scenario discussion is problems, problems, problems. At every case where you try to build relationships and build a conversation in the office, there are always a number of situations that can come up, and invariably something will. It's one of the reasons, I think, that God builds these into our lives and into our situations are to keep us human, to keep us honest, to keep us authentic. If it was just a formula, if evangelism was a formula you applied or a method or a technique or something of this type, then you would just roll it out and you would have literally no personal contact and love wouldn't be communicated in that process. And so very often these scenarios will come up just to show how you respond and give you a chance to grow yourself and a chance to show love in the process. There are a number of topics that we need to get through tonight. We're on page 23 of the syllabus in, like I say, section 7, problems, problem, problems. Now, point A is to be careful in groups. And normally, if you've been following along here, you'll understand that we're trying not to do this in groups, per se. These are generally one-on-one conversations that we're trying to have with our friends and our associates there at the office in such a way as we can have some quietness and privacy. But every now and then you'll get into a discussion on religion or something of this type in a group setting. And you have to handle that somewhat carefully because it's not generally a good scenario to be in. And I got just a couple of points there I want to mention. The first is you can often get hit from the side. You'll be in a conversation with four people or five people, and you'll be making somebody will ask a question. You'll make an observation to one of the persons there, and in that your answer will be some aspect or some fact or some piece of data that will trigger a question from somebody else. Somebody will get come hit you from the side. You'll get blindsided with some other question or objection that might not have been an issue. So you can very easily, you know, as you're trying to honest somebody's answer somebody's honest question, you can get hit from the side with some comment or some skeptical objection or some real negative attitude. The second there, when it's difficult to adapt your conversation to more than one person at a time. This is a very common issue for us that when you're one-on-one with somebody in the cafeteria or one-on-one walking out in the parking lot or one-on-one together at a coffee site or something of this type, it's easy to adapt your conversation to what that individual's felt needs are, what their requirements are. It's altogether different if you've got five people in a group or seven people sitting around discussing things. It's hard to adapt your conversation to those sets of needs because it's generally out here, especially where we live, it's very varied. The multicultural background is substantial. The third bullet there is you will always get questions in a group, and unanswered questions will affect others who did not even consider those questions before that incident. So this is a very common. I've run across this any number of times in my life where somebody will ask a question, where did Cain get his wife? And somebody else that's in the group that's been considering the Lord and considering the gospel and things of this type, never even thought of that question, but said, oh boy, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good question. Boy, is that a problem. Yeah, how about that? And you get the scenario where questions that aren't problems to some people can become problems in that process because of this group setting. So this is a reason why you want to avoid that if you can, is that those would raise questions that don't, in some cases, need to be answered to an individual that's further along in the process. And also in a group, people are not as open or as honest with you compared to one-on-one. That's a fairly common. We are generally more disclosive to our one-on-one with people that we trust. Whereas in a group, there are always group settings and group ethos, so to speak, that creates a scenario where we play roles in small groups. And it generally doesn't allow for a tremendous amount of intimate conversation or conversation about the accident or the situation at home. So you're not likely to get as good a situation for discussing the gospel. So if you can, avoid these kinds of things. You can always, you know, give answers and try to change the subject or things of this type, but you don't want to count on group situations for there to be, for your evangelism purposes, to a single individual. Remember, this is not broadcast evangelism. We're not going to stand up on a soapbox to the group there and preach the gospel. We're picking up, trying to pick them off one by one as the Lord brings their our lives together with Him to make that happen. So that's the first problem, is about being careful in groups. We've talked about a couple of places in here about ways of dealing with that, and we'll talk about that in a separate section on antagonists in group settings. Now, when we get into this particular section B, when the tough questions come up, now, this is a fairly common, because the culture and some cases educational systems do encourage some level of skeptical thinking or critical thinking, and some of it's good, some of it's bad. But in some cases, they're aware of difficult problems and tough questions that come up. There are objections to the faith, or objections to the Bible, or objections to the person of Christ, or objections to the good news itself. We need to know how to deal with these, because, like I said, these are the more common things that will come up in life. And the vast majority of these test questions would be in the category of what we would call theoretical or intellectual questions. And you may not get these if you're on a heartfelt needs basis, having an opportunity-based sharing with somebody that's really in a situation where they need God. And they're aware of this. And they become much more, less theoretical, so to speak, and much more practical in the way they approach these problems. So, but the tough questions do come up. They are ingrained. We'll talk about the various reasons in just a moment, that the question, motives for having questions as we go in. And that's part of the first thing we need to talk about, is that these kind of questions, point one there, is that questions come up during these discussions for several different reasons, and you need to sense which one. Sometimes we have a stereotype that all questions that come up are people trying to avoid God or trying to avoid truth, and that's just not the case. That's way too simplified, and that's just simply not true. There's a wide variety. There are many people where they do. They hide behind an objection. But there are other reasons for people having objections that are very, very legitimate and are, in some cases, prefigurers of a strong walk with Christ once they trust Him. So I've got a number of there that we're going to look through. Different motives or different reasons that questions come up. The first one there is the one that's most popular, I think we would say, from at least in our subculture, is about avoidance, that they are trying to avoid the issue of where their relationship with God is. They're hiding behind the question, is how this would be said sometimes. And this certainly is a factor in some cases. These show up in very strong statements there. I've got a couple examples there. I cannot believe in a God who would make mosquitoes, or I cannot believe in a God who would let this happen, or I cannot believe in a God that would do it this way. That's a strong statement, a very strong, assertive statement. Before I would even consider becoming a Christian, I would have to see proof that. See, that's a strong avoidance. That's a strong statement that said, I'm not even open-minded about this. This is just closed off. I'm going to avoid this whole issue. This is a showstopper for me. So avoidance is one possible reason or motive. B is enslavement. Now, this is where they are obsessed with this question, obsessed or enslaved to this problem, and it stops them from moving forward with God. In other words, if the first one might have been an ethical issue about I'm trying to avoid God, this one is less so. This is where they're enslaved to it. This is where it has captured them. They're being oppressed by this question almost. I give an example, a couple of comments, the way they would say, I think about God a lot, but I cannot see why He would let X happen. That indicates that something bothered. They're open, it looks like. I think about God a lot, but I can't see why this would happen. I think God is up there somewhere, but the church is so full of hypocrites and con men. So here's a statement where the problem there is, of course, is the mixed character of the church, the fact that we are still fallen, but redeemed, that we are all in the various states of progressive sanctification, and so that we do have hypocrites and con men in the church. Those are the ones, that are the most visible because of the way the culture looks at us as the institutions. But when they start a statement off with, I think God is up there somewhere, see, that's a strong open statement. That's a strong open-hearted statement about the scenario. Or But doesn't the Bible somewhere say this? See, that means that they agree with you, except there's something that bothers them about what the Bible says. And these are just sample ways of detecting when somebody's got a real problem and it's bothering them that stops them from moving forward. All three of those bullets, if you think about it, are very open statements, positive statements toward God. It indicates a leaning in the direction of God. But that there's something holding them back, something retarding them from moving forward, some obstacle, and that they're obsessed or enslaved with that. C is the need for respectability. Now, this need for respectability, they have heard this argument from someone respectable, an authority of some type, and feels that this question or this argument needs to be addressed so that they can feel respectable in the process. And this is a fairly common as well. You'll hear this among people that have heard some expert. They'll quote some expert that says the Bible is full of bunk, or some expert that says Jesus didn't rise from the dead, or something of this type that they respect. Scientist, philosopher, academic, government leader, whatever. Okay, whatever their basis of authority is. And it's a couple of ways that this shows up. Well, I read somewhere that the Bible was full of myths. Okay, those come out very commonly. They read it. That was a source of respectability of some book that they read. But don't scientists pretty much believe that God doesn't exist? That tells you that the basis for their authority is in some kind of scientific statements. And they've somehow got the impression that scientists believe God exists. And of course, statistically, the reverse is true. But again, but don't scientists believe this is that case of respectability? They want to believe what the at the same level of respectability of what the respectable scientists believe. One of my college professors taught us that the apostles turned the man Jesus into the God-man Christ. And that's an academic one. This is where a professor got a hold of some students and convinced them of this. And since their professor was an authority figure, having expert authority in their lives, in this particular case, it would show up as this type of objection, a need for respectability. They need to know that if they come up to a contrary position from their professor, that it's still a respectable position from that standpoint. Next page, page 24. D is the need for personal integrity. Now, this is one that you will see that has extremely high ethical motivation, a positive one. If avoidance was extremely negative, this is an extremely positive motivation. And this need for personal integrity, they are positive toward the faith, but feel that they cannot accept it with integrity without some comfort level about some question or some issue. And this shows up in the statements that would something like this. Well, this all makes a lot of good sense, Chris, but I must admit that I'm still a little uncomfortable with some of the ethical behavior in the Bible. So here's this person said, you know, this makes a lot of sense, but the thing that's missing in here is some understanding of how we could have so many bad characters in the Bible or whatever. See, there's an openness toward the faith, a reasonableness says that it makes sense to me. Your story meshes with what I know to be true. But I've got this one problem, and that's an issue for me. And it's something that's dissonance within the system, and I'm not sure I can move much further past behind. Another way would be, another statement would be like Donna. Your story about your experience in college I find very appealing. I think I agree with your thinking, but I've always been hung up about how ignorant men wrote the Bible. Now that's a clear statement that, you know, this makes sense. I like this idea. Your portrayal of your experience of Christ is very appealing. It's beautiful. It makes good sense. But I've got this problem that stops me from going there. It's not an enslavement because it hasn't stopped me from moving forward fully. But it's a matter of personal integrity. I need to resolve this so I feel comfortable that I've made a good decision, a right decision, a true decision, that I haven't been dishonest, that I haven't just been jumping off a cliff of faith, that I haven't been just trying to, in deniance of the fact, trying to look for some kind of miracle cure snake oil thing called God. These people will make excellent disciples, excellent followers of Christ. Everything will fit in. So many things will fit in their lives in the walk of faith. They will serve Him in spirit and truth. And so you want to give people the benefit of the doubt that this is the reason, if at all possible, that this is their reason. And you'll see in many of the statements in dealing with these that we in love, we believe the best, that we understand that this is an integrity issue. We try to assume the best that that's what the case is. Point E there, another motivation for these problems is that they are testing you. That they are asking the question to see how you will handle it, testing your character and your integrity and your beliefs. They could care less, by the way, what the answer is. They're not even going to listen. They're just going to watch you to see how you deal with it. Are you getting nervous? Do you get defensive? Do you get it combative? Do you wobble here? I mean, what? How do you respond? And so, some of these that show up are like, but what about other religions? Don't they lead to God too? Or how can you believe in a God that lets so much evil happen? See, that's not why do you believe that evil happens, or I can't believe in a God that does it. That's how can you believe in it? They're going to ask how you deal with these issues, how you deal with problems. Are you just going to sweep them under the rug and say, oh, but I feel good about this? Or are you going to say, well, here's the data, and here's what I understand it, and here's where my thinking and my feeling and my heart and my spirit leads me to believe. That last one, but why do you think the New Testament stories are true? See, they're, in some cases, they're not asking you for data. They're asking you for your personal view, how personally you deal with an issue. If your response to that is, I deal with this if you deal with it in a credible fashion, very often that will authenticate your character to them. And then they will have a greater confidence in your story about the gospel. They'll have a greater they will give you more credibility when they listen to you about Jesus if they see that your approach toward a problem is fair, gentle, and non-dogmatic, and careful. They're, in other words, credible to them. A final reason for some problems and issues would be lack of perspective and knowledge. They think this is a big issue, but it might not be at all. I give the example there of John 4 and the woman at the well. When Jesus is there with the woman of the well in John 4, she brings up a series of questions and objections to him as he confronts her with her need about who he is, his identity as the Messiah, and her need for water that springs up an everlasting life. And she wants to change the subject and she wants to get into what mountain do we worship on? These kinds of things, trivial religious issues that to her are somehow critical. Now, she may have been avoiding it, but there's a good chance it was just a lack of perspective or knowledge. And I give a couple examples there. You know, Carl, this is making a lot of sense to me in my situation. I just don't think, though, that I could ever give up my chewing tobacco. Now, somehow this individual, when you're talking about God and a responsive heart and openness toward God and confidence and honesty with Him about His Son or their need for Him or something like this, all of a sudden they've smuggled in this issue of chewing tobacco. They've put it right up there with faith and loyalty and openness and things of this type and God's forgiveness. And those two are just, that just indicates a lack of perspective. That may indicate some level of enslavement about the scenario toward this issue, an obsession or addiction, some kind of long-term guilt that they've had about chewing tobacco or something of this type that raises its priority and its perspective. But this is an indication that something's out of whack here in terms of perspective, and that may need to be cleared up. Another example is, but I don't think this is practical for me. Debbie was raised Methodist, and I was raised Catholic. I don't think we could agree on a church we could go to. Let's see, they're thinking post, they're looking at the practical scenario, not the way it looks religiously as opposed to the way it looks inside their spirit. Again, this is just simply some level of lack of perspective, but it's not it's a valid, all these are valid objections, valid questions, those kinds of things. It's just a matter in this particular about lack of perspective and knowledge. It's not at the same level of the same level of intellectual bearing upon the question. These are practical, and therefore they're very, very real to these individuals, but it's a reason that some questions might come up. Now, those are the various reasons, and there may be others, but those are the main ones that I've come in contact with over the years. And you can see they range in character, from everything from the avoidance one to the openness, the need for personal integrity. And in all cases, the response that you give will be characterized by these points in number 2. We're on the bottom of page 24. And the main aspects of your response is love, gentleness, honesty, and perspective. Love is taking them seriously. The whole reason that these kind of conversations occur are for this reason of love. We've talked any number of times about the whole point here is showing the love of Christ, showing the love of God to these people. The love that we have personally experienced. Remember, it's anchored in our personal experience of God. This is not some textbook knowledge of God. But this is the love that we have experienced and we're trying to share with someone else. So the very first thing is that you take these problems or questions seriously. You give them the benefit of the doubt that it is a legitimate question and it is something that's bothering them, and you take them seriously. You give them hope by the fact that you... Because some of these will be problems that they have never told anybody. I've had situations where people were raised religious and they were afraid to ask these questions. They may have asked them once or twice to religious authorities and had the problem with how people responded. It's not altogether uncommon at all to be ridiculed for asking these questions. I get it all the time on the think tank. People come through that have been told to shut up, sit down, because their questions were impertinent or irreverent, or even though it ate them up inside, even though it was a very deep felt need, even though they were vibrant Christian believers, and it was just a matter of where they were in their life at the time. And so you've got a scenario where the first point there about love is taking them very, very seriously. You show them love and respect in this process. The second one is gentleness. This is kindness, warmth, and at their pace. Now, the kindness and warmth, like I say, what you cannot afford to do here is to get defensive over these. You may be in way over your head. They may ask you a technical question that you've never even heard of, and or you can't imagine what it would take to answer something of that type, some deep thing, and something way beyond your expertise in history or science or ancient languages or history, whatever. And your response has to be that in terms of kindness and warmth, and your response to them has to be at their pace. In other words, they have to get an answer. If they ask you a one-paragraph question, don't give them a 10-page answer. You got to ask them, you give them a response that's a paragraph to a paragraph, and say, does that help, basically? I mean, does that make sense? Does this fit? Well, no, I'm a little fuzzy on these details, and then maybe you give them a one page. And how does that work? I mean, that raised this issue, and then you go to 10 pages or a book or whatever. But you need to go at their pace, and the answer is always when it satisfies them enough. We'll talk about satisfying these questions. The main thing all you're trying to do here on these questions, you're not necessarily trying to answer them. You're trying to get them to pause the question, so to speak. One of the goals here is to get them to suspend judgment on it. If you give them enough data that would give them reason to doubt the negative conclusion of their objection. Let's say make an argument that God can't be good because He lets mosquitoes live. Okay? If you can just give them enough data about mosquitoes, their whatever pollination, you know, whatever good that they do kind of thing. I'm just using this as an example. To say, oh, well, maybe there is a, you know, the data is not conclusive that mosquitoes imply an evil God. Okay? If they say, oh, the data is mixed, all you're trying to do is get them to pause making the harsh conclusion from that data, from their data, that God can't exist or be good. See? And so in many cases, all you're trying to do, you're not trying to decisively answer the problem for them, the question, but give them enough data to soften, to put it in pause, or to neutralize the damage. They'll have plenty of time to study that question later as God tries to grow them. So in gentleness, you're trying to deal with, like I say, non-defensive. Don't get combative here. Remember, love is going to have to show itself in this gentleness and warmth and kindness. Point C, honesty. Never, never bluff. And never, never minimize the seriousness of some of the questions. It may be the person that made the objection about the chewing tobacco. You may want to burst out laughing. But to them, it's a very, very serious problem. It's a very serious question about how can God accept me even though I chew tobacco or whatever. And I'm just picking on that as a habit. But it could be people that wear bow ties for all, you know, it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever. But don't minimize the seriousness, because if it eats them enough for them to raise it, then it's a serious question. And never, never bluff. If you say, oh, that's an easy one, let's move on to the next one. If they say, well, what's the answer to it? And then you give them your answer, and then they've already studied the issue 10 years, and they blow you away, then you don't want to bluff. If you know answers or you know resources that you don't know, never, never bluff. Always take them seriously. If you say, I don't know, but I will try to find this out for you if this is something that's important to you, That's infinitely better than saying, yeah, I know the answer to this, and it's pretty slam dunk, so I don't even need to share it with you. And the final layer is perspective. Try to keep the question in perspective. If it is important, treat it so. If not, try to postpone discussing and try to stay on track with the main issue, and the main issue is about Jesus. You don't want to get into, you're trying to avoid letting the question derail you. Your hope here and your prayer for this person is that you can neutralize the question temporarily to where it ceases being a problem with them dealing with the personal issue of their relationship with Christ. You want to keep it the perspective, and we've got a number of illustrations on where we talk about these in terms of how you communicate this. I'm willing to around the idea or the concept that I'm certainly willing to dig this up for you if it's going to stop you from considering the love of the Lord and His ability to help you and to get involved in your life in this situation. But I'd prefer to just, you know, I can get you massive amounts of detail, but I'd like you to feel comfortable enough with it so you can move on to this more base issue, you know, basal issue of, you know, your relationship with God, just like I had to do. So those are your overarching kind of emotional and spiritual responses: love, gentleness, honesty, and perspective. Now I've got on the next page what I call the categories of questions, and you've got there in your syllabus, starting after page 25, a spreadsheet, a little chart of the different types of. Some starter kinds of responses for common objections. I think there's three pages there. And what I put there in point three are basically the main categories of questions that you're likely to get. And these are based on the common ones that I've had in Western civilization settings. They may be different in other cultures and specialized groups, but in this one, they fall in the category of the character of God, the reliability of the Bible, the character of the church, and misconceptions about the nature of a relationship with God. So I'm going to read through this list. I'm not going to take us through all of the summary responses, but we'll talk about one or two of those just to show you what we're talking about later in this session. So the problems on the character of God: there's a problem of the suffering and evil in the world. This counts against the character of God. Illegal human sacrifice of Christ on the cross. Why was that God contradicting himself? The Old Testament God as being a belligerent, pugnacious, bloodthirsty, warlike, as opposed to the New Testament God of love. The glory-hungry God, worship me, a burned kind of issue. The unfair God, Jesus way or no matter where, when you live. If you weren't living on this side of Jesus and in Western culture, you're doomed to hell forever. That kind of question. Under the reliability of the Bible, you get the authorship by humans and uneducated, gullible ones at that. You have authorship of the Bible for bad motives, like they were going to, they wrote the Bible to control the masses or something of this type. Transmission, translation errors. You still have people today, educated ones, that believe that the Bible is a translation of a translation of a translation of a translation. And like the telephone game, of course, that waters all down. As opposed to, we discover more and more and more manuscripts all the time of the originals. Pagan myths got merged in that Jesus was just a basic, you know, a Jewish carpenter, a good guy, good teacher, popular leader. But all of a sudden they smuggled all these pagan dying and rising God myths in. Evolution and science disproves it. Sometimes you'll get that. The third category of question there is about the character of the church. If the first one was about God, the second one was about the Bible, you'll get those about the church. Crusades and religious wars. We'll talk about why would God start an institution that acts the way the church has. And they'll use the Inquisition, the Crusades, religious wars, etc. to demonstrate that it can't be true. Two, hypocrites, racist, weirdos, and bad evangelists, the common objection due to television. Three, the disunity of the church, the fact that if we had our act together, why are there so many infighting, internecine warfare and sibling rivalry among the branches of the Christian church? And then finally, you'll get misconceptions about the nature of a relationship with a God. You'll have, I have to give something up. I have to start pretending to be good. I have to hang out with hypocrites and self-righteous jerks in the church. And these are, they when they make these kinds of objections, of course, they know something about the church. They've been around these people, and they're aware of stories that they've heard and things of this type, and they make assumptions that this is what being religious means, or getting to know God means they have to give stuff up, start acting like a hypocrite, hanging out with them. So those are the main categories of questions. And what we've got over there, if you'll take just a second and look at the first page of the summary responses for Christian common objections, you'll see we've got them a little chart there. And on the left, I've got the category with character of God for the first five there, as you see that. And then I've got the corresponding to the outline, suffering and evil in the world, reading down the middle column, illegal human sacrifice, etc., glory, hungry God. And then I've got a one paragraph, very, very short, one or two sentence response to that, that may be enough to satisfy somebody. So look at the first one, about suffering and evil in the world. You would say something like, well, you know, the issue of suffering is a really complex one for them, because we know of too many situations in which God allows it to wake us up, you know, to the deeper issues of life and family. We do know that God is certainly not insensitive about it, because He stepped right into the middle of suffering at the cross in the Son Jesus for our benefit. So He's very much aware of the realities of that. And so it's a pretty complex issue, but He did show us His love. And so that's the way the little chart there works. You can see I go through each one of those and I give a possible star. Now, for some people that will be enough, but for some people they're going to need considerably more. But this at least will set the tone. It will at least set the parameters of the discussion and provide a starting point that is characterized by a view of God of that being good-hearted. So some of these, they'll have comments about, I'm not sure how that objection really came out, because God shows Himself good-hearted in so many ways. So, you'll look at that yourself, work through those. It'll be part of your homework to see which of these are the ones that eat at you the most, of course. But that will be the content of our response. So, if you turn back now to 25, we're now on the scenario where we're going to talk about the things to include in the response. What kind of elements? When they ask the question, you determine it needs to be answered at a more or less full manner. These are some of the ways, some of the things to include. Now, you don't have to include all of them. This is, again, not a religious formula. This is something that you have to do gently and in love and pay attention to what's going on and do the best you can. It's not a matter of you have to have these in the proper order or God won't bless it at all. God is, fortunately cuts us a lot of slack this way. Cuts us a lot of slack. But here are some of the elements to consider in to include in your response. And I've got them here worded in first person as well as the topic. So the first one, A, on page 25, is acknowledgement of the issue. And I give Gail, that's a good issue, good question that many people are concerned about initially. In other words, you've authenticated that it is a real issue and you've acknowledged it. Point B, then, would be appreciation for their honesty with you. Okay, and I truly appreciate your honesty and openness with me about your concern here. You know, you're giving them a legitimate piece of praise, the fact that they have articulated this issue to you. They've been open. Some people don't tell you these, literally. You'll have people that won't turn to the Lord, and they won't tell you why. And it might be one of these kinds of questions. C, assurance that there are answers that will probably help them with this issue. But let me assure you that you are not alone in asking this question over the past centuries, smile, and that there are many, many approaches and answers available to help you feel comfortable about this. Now, consistently you'll have me use the phrase here about feeling comfortable about this issue, about having peace of mind about this, about having a sense of integrity about this. We're trying to comment that this is a matter not of mathematical rigor or scientific proof, but it's a matter of comfortable peace of mind that this is where God is calling us. That we'll consistently come back to saying God wants you to have peace of mind about this issue. He's interested in the welfare of your heart and your feelings about these things. So phrases like feeling comfortable about this, peace of mind, a sense of integrity, having a good conscience about this belief is important. D, as needed, a brief summary of possible answers. See the chart. So D was that one paragraph. And you might familiarize yourself with the ones that you anticipate getting. You might say them three times in the mirror. You might look over those and try it, word it your own way, to where you could give that to somebody at this point in the conversation. Okay? You could also, turning now to page 27, you could at that point have a statement that you have gotten answers later in time to questions you initially had. So the wording I've got there is, I too had some initial questions, and many more after that, smile. But after I began opening my life up more to God, I got satisfying answers to them. Now, what you're trying to do is set an expectation of a couple things. One, not that you're going to get answers all immediately to all these questions. It's a function of openness to God. It's a function of openness to time. But that the initial questions do get answered, that there's hope. It may not be the specific question they're talking about, but it would certainly be initial questions. F is a reminder that the God of honest relationships is also the God of truth, and that He cares for their peace of mind in this area. You know, the good news is that the God who wants us to be honest with Him about who He is and who we are is obviously committed to truthfulness. And with His good heart, it's also a concern that we come to peace of mind about this issue over time. It may not be immediately, but to have peace of mind about this, this is something that's important to God. And what we're trying there, as I just mentioned, is we're trying to point out that God is interested in the peace of their heart, the health of their heart, their comfort with truthfulness and ethics and integrity and how all this stuff fits together. So this is a reminder that God wants them to feel comfortable. In other words, this is not just a matter of them, that God wants them to be unhappy or dissatisfied with the answers, but He wants a holistic response. He wants a holistic comfort level. And this is going to, in some cases, for some skeptics, this takes the high ground away from them. They want to feel comfortable that they have made the right decision when they reject God. God wants them to do the same thing. He wants them to be completely comfortable with the answers and objections. He wants true peace of mind. He doesn't want a divided soul where part of it believes this and part of it believes that. He's trying to get us to remember passion and truth, spirit and truth in our relationship with Him. So God is after this honest relationships. He wants peace of mind. Communicate to them. Tell them this is not bad that you feel this way, that this bothers you, that it eats of you. God's concerned about this. It may not come instantly because some problems take longer than to solve, but they are definitely good answers. G. Offer to find information on this for their further research if they are interested. You know, Gail, if this problem is really eating at you to the point of impeding your thinking process about the more fundamental issues of you and God, then I will be more than happy to find some material to help you defuse this issue for yourself. Do you think you need me to do this for you now? Or is this something that can wait until you work through some of these more basic issues about your relationship with God? Now, in that, I've made a couple of points there, if you'll notice. The first one is that the impeding. You got to get them to understand that this, get them to answer the question, is this something that's holding me back or not? Okay? And at the same time, you're communicating that the fundamental issues are their relationship with God. Now, a person may spit back and say, no, this is just as fundamental because this is my personal integrity issue. And that may be entirely true. That may be central and fundamental. That they can't go to a God that they believe is a figment of their imagination if their overall worldview won't allow that God to exist. And that's okay. That's entirely reasonable. It's not altogether, certainly in the statistical majority of people, but there are people out there that have hearts like that, that God's been preparing to have a heart like that, to be quite frank, to bring them into the kingdom through this method, through this way. Offer that, and then you ask them in this objection or this question to prioritize. Is this something that we have to do now, or can we go back to the basics? Can we get back to the more fundamental issues about how you work out a relationship with God? And get them to prioritize. They'll give you some indication, now I guess it can wait. And you're trying to sort of point out and get you tons of information on this. Is it important enough for you to deal with tons of information or not? And they will prioritize on the basis of that. H is encouragement to ask God for peace of mind in this area, as well as the initial area of concern. And the way I've got it worded there, since this is a troubling issue for you, why don't you also ask God in private, not with me here, but in private, to help you find peace of mind in this issue?
in addition to the other challenges in your life we've been talking about over the past few weeks. So hopefully they've already at this particular point started opening their lives up to God, maybe even praying about it. You encourage them to pray about it. You've been praying about it. About the other time, just add them to add something in there. As you're talking to God about this situation and opening up and telling him the way you feel about these things, why don't you also add this in about giving you a peace of mind about this issue, giving you some clarity and insight. Certainly couldn't hurt. Might help a lot, might go a long way in helping all of us sort of work through this and encourage them to do that. I is the suggestion that they keep thinking about the more fundamental issue of where God should be in their life and experience. So this is, remember, we keep coming back to this, the central issue of who God is and how they see Him. I know these kinds of questions can be troublesome and even difficult to work through in times like this, especially in the middle of crisis. But let me encourage you to keep the more fundamental issues at a higher priority in your thinking, Steve. The deep issues of our hearts, of our lives and our values should probably not take a back seat to this slightly more academic question. Just my suggestion from one who faced a similar issue when I first opened up to the bigger issues of life. And all you're doing is encouraging them to prioritize, and a little perspective here. This may be the showstopper. This may be the big thing, the big issue for them. But until they ask the question, until they face it and try to prioritize, they may not be able to put it on. They may not be able to table that motion. They may not be able to put it off to the side. See, this may be a thing that they cannot get insight to until you raise this question about, well, is it more important or less important than this thing right now? Should we go deal with this now? And these elements, when you weave these elements in, see, we're back to that love, gentleness, honesty, and perspective. We're trying to apply those aspects of the fruit of Spirit to the lives of in our living. And so when we answer questions or we approach them, and even once we don't know where we can't answer and we have to refer them to other things, okay, even the way we do it in love and gentleness is important. And the final point there on 27 is nowhere to point them for more info. What I recommend are there are a number of apologetics works and practical Christian works that will address some of these issues. I've listed them on the think tank. If you go to the book section, I've got a recommended books, a little spreadsheet there with the abbreviations that have to do with historical apologetics and philosophical apologetics and things of that type. And there are many, many, many more very common popular works that you can find that give you some start. Paragraph level, one page level, sometimes a 10-page level answers, replies that work for some of these difficult questions. And websites, you want to always, again, like in the literature section we were talking about, always make sure it's something you've looked at, that you can understand, and if you recommend them to them, recommend them with caveats. If you have to say, now, I don't agree with everything they say here, but the way they dealt with this issue of the New Testament authorship is pretty good. I feel comfortable recommending that to you. I'm not sure I recommend you sending them to places that have harsh tones, even with the caveat. If you send them to a website that's got a particularly harsh or combative or dogmatic tone toward skeptics or toward questioners or things of this type, it won't do a lot of good for you to say, now, I'll send you this. They got good content, but they don't show the love of Christ, because that's exactly where they'll see. They'll go there, and they'll put you in the category with them, even though you've hopefully differentiated yourself by your love, so that you can make progress here. And you'll lose some ground there, perhaps. So you want to watch the tone of the things you recommend to them, good-hearted stuff, if at all possible, neutral stuff, if that's what you fall back on. Don't take the air. There's a surprising amount of Christian arrogance that shows up in apologetic materials, anti-cult materials. It's disturbing at some level. But nowhere to send them for this. Sometimes the resources are people. Sometimes the resources are websites. Sometimes the resources are books. Sometimes they're tape series. But again, make sure you've done your due diligence on them. Now, these are the kinds of responses. We'll talk about, we'll move on to other issues in the next section on antagonist and some dealing with difficult people in this kind of scenario. But the overall goal of this section was to make sure that we don't stereotype questions or problems as being either one Oh no, here comes a problem. I'm intimidated. I'm scared. Oh no, this is going to derail the whole thing. We don't want to have that response, because the problems are generally just another opportunity for you to grow, opportunity for you to show love, to take them seriously, and meet some needs in the way, and to demonstrate, get them off on the right foot about trusting God on some of these. The second stereotype is that when they raise a question or problem for you, to stereotype them as suppressing the truth, or hiding from God, or running away from God, or using this as a smokescreen, or something of this type. There are very, very many legitimate questions that God has worked in their hearts to ask. In some cases, there that things that that are felt needs in that kind of situation. It's beautiful to give them a beautiful answer. So you want to assume the best. You want to believe the best. Take them seriously. Treat their questions with respect, with dignity. Honor their heartfelt issues and respond in love and answer those questions. Try to stay focused. Try to stay on track. When the woman at the well threw all these things up at Jesus, he gave a one-sentence answer. And then focused her back on the track, if at all possible. So I encourage you to continue with this as we look through problems. Thanks.